I Suck at Dating with Dean Unglert and Jared Haven, an iHeartRadio podcast.
And welcome to Help I Suck at Dating, quarantine style. I'm currently in my father-in-law's office. Great for audio purposes. I'm joined via Skype with the one, the only, the wonderfully handsome, endearing, sweet, mustache man himself, Dean Unglert. Dean, how you doing, buddy?
Are you not in the closet today?
I came out of the closet.
Nice.
Yeah, so Ashley and I have had a long talk, long discussion, and I decided to come out of the closet and start recording from my father-in-law's office.
That's good. It's probably a lot more comfortable outside of the closet.
Yeah, I can be more myself. You know, I felt like I couldn't be myself inside there. I was just surrounded by clothing and shoes, and I was distracted, and I was lonely. Feels good. Feels good.
Right. Well, that's good. Yep, I'm just hanging out in bed. Just woke up.
Dean, you just made me yawn.
Waiting for Caitlin to bring me some coffee, hopefully, getting the week started, you know?
Oh, that's very sweet. Does Caitlin bring you coffee every morning?
No, sometimes I bring her coffee.
So who wakes up earlier, mostly? Is it you or Caitlin?
I guess I should text her. It's mostly her, but sometimes I'll get up earlier and make coffee. I brought her some breakfast in bed the other day.
Ooh, what'd you make her?
Honey bunches of oats.
Oof. How much milk did you put in? Like a quarter of the bowl, half the bowl? How much of a milk guy are you?
Oats is, it's, I don't know, when you pour the milk in, it's like it doesn't really... it doesn't fill up the cereal very much, so you got to really underestimate how much milk you're supposed to put in, because you don't want to be left with a whole gallon of milk by the time you're done with your cereal. So that one's a little tricky, but I think I figured out the perfect formula for it.
Well, sometimes I'm the type of guy where I will pour milk in and then I'll go back and pour more milk in, because I usually have frosted flakes, and frosted flakes get soggy within 3.5 seconds apparently. So I really moderate the amount of milk that goes into the bowl. This is how you know we've been quarantined for 3.5 weeks, because we just had a 2-minute discussion about how much milk should be poured into a cereal bowl. I think we're all starting to lose it a little bit.
I'm going to say that I don't think I've ever even thought about pouring milk into a bowl a second time. That's crazy to me. Maybe like a second bowl of cereal, yeah, but I'm not pouring any more milk in there unless I pour more cereal in there too.
I think it says a lot about the type of person that I am. I overthink things. I'm too detail-oriented. I don't like soggy frosted flakes. I think it says a lot about my character.
It really speaks to the Haven in you.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we do have a wonderful episode coming up for you, Suck Army, today. We have a great guest that will be calling in very shortly. It is Judge Lynn Toler from Marriage Boot Camp, Hip Hop Edition. You might also know her from Divorce Court. She is the judge that deals with divorces on TV. She is awesome, very personable, very outgoing, so I'm very excited to see what she has to say. Because Marriage Boot Camp, the final episode airs this Thursday, I believe. The season finale, yes, Thursday, 10 p.m. on the WE TV. So she'll be coming up. We also have some of your wonderful listener questions that we couldn't get to last week. That was when we posted on the Instagram asking for you guys just ask questions about anything, dating, Dean, myself, quarantine, all that good stuff. And we do have an email from Anonymous. So our good friend Nick Viall wrote in once again, which is very nice of him. He writes in like weekly, I feel like, at this point.
He writes in a lot.
Yeah, he writes in constantly. So we have a really cool episode I'm very excited to get to. But Dean, how has your past week been? Better, worse, the same?
Well, and also, sorry to go tangential here, but Judge Lynn Toler also wrote 20 tips for surviving COVID-19, like in terms of your own sanity, it looks like, right? So maybe we can talk to her about that a little bit.
Yeah, definitely talk to her about us keeping sane during this crazy time that we're currently living with. Good tease, yeah. Dean. Thanks. That's what Dean does. Like, I just kind of read the whole thing, but then Dean comes in and just...
I'm a tease, what can I say?
No, you're perfect. You're like raw talent, you know what I mean? You're like Peyton Manning. You were born to just take the NFL by storm. Me, I'm more like Alex Smith. Like, I got to work every second to just try to keep up to, like, a lower, like, just a level behind you. You know what I mean?
Peyton Manning works pretty hard, okay? He won a Super Bowl for the best team in the entire world. But last week's been good. I mean, nothing's really changed on our end. I would imagine probably same with you, right? I really feel like not much has the ability to change right now.
No, not much has changed. Also, so Dean and I are Skyping in right now, and we also have Tori, who is on Skype, and I just so happened to be watching Tori because Dean and I are just audio and Tori's on video right now.
I just realized and that.
I saw Tori close up cleaning her teeth, almost looking like she was brushing her teeth with the sleeve of her sweatshirt, which I can't imagine is sanitary.
Okay, what I was doing is I just drank my coffee and then I was like, oh no, I wonder if my teeth are getting like yellow from how much coffee I've been drinking while inside, because usually when I go to Starbucks and you get the straw, then it doesn't hit your teeth. So that was my whole thought process, but I didn't realize you guys were watching me. I also was thinking the other day that we are all living a life like Dean Ungler in the van, I feel like. Everyone's washing their hair way less. I bet you a million people aren't really putting on a ton of deodorant because you're not really going outside.
We're having a lot less fun than we would in the van.
For sure. There are a lot of questions on people asking you if you've been in the van at all. Are you guys, like, what's the status of the van right now?
Yeah, should we do that now or should we get to the questions after we speak with Judge Lynn Toler, though?
Well, let's just answer the question about the van. I'm curious, too. Have you been in the van? Have you been driving the van at all?
No, I can't take the van anywhere. Everywhere is closed. I wanted to take it to like some national parks, but every national park that I know of is closed. So there's really no point to take it anywhere because I can't take it anywhere.
You could take a drive down the Pacific Coast Highway. I don't know if you want to do that in the van.
I took a drive in my Jeep down the Pacific Coast Highway. I got my motorcycle working and drove that a little bit, but there's no need for the van right now, which kind of is a bummer. And I really thought about taking it out too. And I still might at some point just like drive it up into some BLM land randomly and just like post it up for a couple days. But yeah, it's crazy because not only is COVID-19 closing everything down in the cities and towns, but all the parks and all like everything is closed. My friends told me that him and his girlfriend who have been quarantined together tried to go surfing the other day. And like the second they got to the beach, it was like all marked off and like a beach patrolman came and like kicked him out right away. So they're like super strict about everything here, even in LA. So,
well, there's something actually about the beach and COVID-19 that's very interesting, that that corona could actually be at the beach and in the surf. And there's an article by CBS San Francisco that I won't get into now, but you should check it out. I'll send you the link.
Unprecedented and action I'm in playing LA the video County
right now, which is really bad for audio. Sorry about that, guys. But it talks about how the coronavirus could potentially be in the ocean, which is quite terrifying.
Because doesn't it only live up, like there's different surfaces it can only live up, like live on for so long. I think steel, it's like 48 hours.
It's quite a while. It says
I've gotten this 24.
Yeah, I mean, everybody listening should go to the CDC website, and they obviously provide far better information than we could possibly ever tell you, but yeah, it lives. I know it lives on cardboard for quite a while. I think 24 hours, lives on steel for a few days, if not more. So, I mean, that's why you know they're recommending you wash your hands constantly, because if you touch a doorknob that has potentially coronavirus on it, you know, and if you touch your face, then that could be big trouble. That's why they say just wash your hands, don't touch your face, because you want to be able to kill the virus if it is on your hands before you touch anything else. Anyway. Dean, when did you, I have a question for you. When did you break your leg again? When was this?
December 23rd.
So I feel like this has been the longest stretch of your life because you're such an extrovert and you travel and you had the whole van life before anything happened. And now, you know, you had the terrible accident where you broke your leg and now you can't go anywhere because of COVID-19. So where's your mental status at right now? How are you, doing emotionally?
I mean, as shitty as it sounds to say, the fact that I can't do anything, I think I said this last week, like, I can't do anything because my leg is broken, but at least no one else is doing anything that I have to have, like, FOMO on, you know what I mean?
So you're still, like, your leg is still pretty, you can't do much on it.
Well, for the listeners out there, and Jared includes you, you guys can always go check out my blog, deanybabies.com. I just wrote about my recovery up till now. I got, like, stem cell treatment about a month ago. So, like, I can, like, walk. I can do things, but I'm still pretty limited. I can, like, kind of hike, but I can't rock climb. I can't skydive. I can I rode my motorcycle the other day, which maybe wasn't the best idea, but I could still do it. Yeah, so I can kind of walk without a... If you saw me walking down the street and you didn't know who I was, and it was like I had just gotten up for the day and I wasn't tired, I probably wouldn't be limping, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, but the thing is, everybody knows who you are when you walk down the streets. Dean, you're like the most famous guy.
Well, my point is, like, if you weren't looking for a limp, you probably wouldn't see the limp.
No, I got you. So this is a question for both you and Tori. I'm curious, have you guys been trying something, anything new? Because I feel like all the time we tell ourselves, if we just had this amount of time free, I could accomplish this and that and so on and so forth. Is there anything that you guys are trying right now that you've always wanted to do but haven't had the time to?
Or I want to hear from Tori first.
I've been working a lot, so I haven't had like a ton of spare time where I'm like, oh, there's so much to do. But I am a huge, huge extrovert. And so I'm never that person who's like, oh, I should read a book or I should do a puzzle. And I've been doing that so much lately. I just finished a 1,000-piece puzzle and I legitimately like didn't know who I was. I had so much fun doing it. So that was something kind of new.
How many pieces?
1,000-piece.
Whoa, that's a lot.
Yeah, I just ordered a 2,000-piece, so things are getting a little wild. Here.
Damn, stepping up in the world. Dean, how many puzzle pieces was your puzzle?
Mine is the biggest they could make it was 200.
Wow. Man, you maybe suck. A lot. Tori's killing you in that department, in the puzzle department. Tori's dominating.
Tori, where do you find your puzzles?
So the weird thing is this one actually got shipped to iHeartRadio as just kind of a promotion. It was a Pixar puzzle. And I was going to send it to my sister and my brother-in-law because they love puzzles, but I just never got to it. And then this all happened. And I was like, well, I have literally nothing to do. So I just randomly had it. But I've been going online to try to buy new puzzles. And I only want to do 1,000 piece because then it just like really takes up your time. And they're like $76.
Yeah, they're
or expensive. If you get on Amazon, then you get one for like 30. It doesn't ship till June.
Yeah.
So I had to like I finally found one on Amazon. I had to pre-order it. And it's supposed to be here April 12th, but we will see.
Are you wiping down all the packages that come?
I try. It's so hard. I'm the fourth born child, so germs are like not a big deal to me, but I'm really trying to restructure myself to know like, okay, put on gloves when I'm going to the grocery store, wipe down all the boxes, wipe down counters, but I'm trying as much as I can.
Don't touch your face, Tori.
When you did the 800-piece puzzle, did you do it all in one sitting or did you take breaks?
Do you mean 1,000?
So what?
Did you just say 100-piece puzzle?
The 800-piece puzzle.
I didn't do 800. I did 1,000.
Oh, I thought you said you did 800. Now you're doing 1,000. Or now you're doing
2,000. She did 800 more than you.
Yeah, no, I did it over, so again, I'm such a rookie on puzzles. I realize now you got to start with the border and then work your way in. But I was just so excited all over the characters' faces. I would just start putting things together and then I was like, wait, where does this piece go? So now I'm ready for my 2,000-piece puzzle to come and I'm going to strictly work around the border and then on the way in. And I feel like that will make it less time. But the other one took me about 3 days, 3 or 4 days.
Okay. So you're really slow. That's fine. That makes me feel better about it.
I got a question.
Listen, you did 500 pieces. That's like my 5-year-old cousin does that.
Wow.
I did 200 pieces.
Oh, that's like your 2-year-old cousin. I have a question because I haven't done a puzzle in a very long time. What do you do with the puzzle after you're done? You accomplish this feat. You put together a 1,000-piece puzzle or in Dean's case, a 200-piece puzzle. What do you do afterwards with it? You just destroy it?
Yeah, I kept mine up for a few days, and then I was like, okay, I really bonded with the characters, because again, they were all cute, like, movie Pixar characters, so I kept feeling like they were my friends. You guys, it's getting really lonely over here for me. and then I was like, oh, how do I break it down? And then finally, we're like, okay, we got to break it down, because let's get a new puzzle. But then I didn't realize how hard it is to find new puzzles. But yeah, you just kind of destroy it. But the hard thing is, usually you would pass off the puzzle to somebody else and be like, oh, have fun with it. But you can't in this time, because... You know, you could be asymptomatic or you could have touched something at one point or whatever. So now we're just kind of like holding it.
This is what you could do. You could flip all the pieces over and upside down and then do it that way.
That sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah, but it sounds like a good little challenge. Anyway, I don't know. Should we take a break and then get Judge Lynn Toler on the phone?
Yes.
Absolutely. All
right. So for the listeners out there, stay tuned. We're going to be right back and we'll get her on the phone.
Welcome back to Help I Suck at Dating. We have a great guest who is currently on the line right now. You know her from Divorce Court and Marriage Bootcamp Hip Hop Edition, which the season finale is this Thursday, 10 o'clock on WeTV. It is Judge Lynn Toler. Judge, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, first of all, how are you doing through this quarantine? Right now we're Skyping, and I can see that you were in your office, I believe.
Yeah, no, we're doing great. Today's my husband and I 31st wedding anniversary. So right. We've got our little mini party planned. Me, him, and our two kids, and the dog.
That sounds amazing. Well, congratulations on your wedding anniversary. Right. What's the party consist of? Are you guys going to have, like, cook dinner
they
together?
Come over, I'm gonna cook.
Oh, there we go. That sounds like a good party. It sounds like all we can do right now anyway.
Exactly.
So, Judge, tell us a little bit about Marriage Bootcamp Hip Hop Edition and why you wanted to get involved with the show.
Yeah, Marriage Bootcamp Hip Hop Edition is, I've been on Marriage Bootcamp for a long time, maybe about 10 years, and I really love the Hip Hop Editions because it speaks to young people, it speaks to a current culture, it speaks to a community, and it gives everybody an opportunity to look at the reality stars that are often, you know, coming apart on TV. And watching us go through some exercises to help bring them together.
And so you were on Divorce Court for 13 years, 13 seasons, is that correct?
13, yep.
Wow. Well, so now you're on Marriage Bootcamp. How did you initially get involved in becoming a judge on television? Because you were a judge in Cleveland prior to this, if I'm correct?
Yeah, in Cleveland Heights. I got a telephone call one day at my courthouse that said Fox called. And that was on a Monday. I called them back. They said, do you have any tape of you doing stuff? I said, yes. I sent that Tuesday. They got it Wednesday. I was in LA on Friday. And I first did the show Power of Attorney. That didn't work out. I was retired for 5 years just hanging out. And then Divorce Court came along and I've been on there. I was on there for 13 years.
Wow. Is there one case that you remember that really stands out?
Oh, so many. The woman who used to hum to manage her stress, called the Hummer. We made Ellen on that one. But yeah, a lot of them stand out. 13 years, it's a long time, and everybody's, you know, half in the bag.
No, oh, I can only imagine. There must be like 10,000 that stand out to you right now. But I've watched Divorce Court before, and it's a fascinating show. I remember thinking, you know, who would go on this show and bring all their baggage, because it's some of the cases are just so crazy, and people come in and obviously you are the judge, jury, and executioner.
I'll tell you why they come. They come because the women bug the living daylights out of their dude to make them come, because they want me to tell the dude that the dude is wrong, and the dude comes to shut her up.
Sounds about right.
That's about 9 out of 10 times. That's exactly what's going on.
Do you typically side? I mean, not going in being biased or anything, but do you typically side with the women or the men, do you think?
Neither. I fuss at everybody because everybody's a little bit wrong all the time.
No, that's a good way. You got to look at it. You're a judge, so you look at it both sides. I like that.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Judge, can we hear about I want to hear about the Hummer.
The Hummer. Now, I'm going to hum for you. And I'm going to apologize in advance because I can't sing.
Okay.
But the Hummer, every time he said something she didn't like, she would go, and she hummed through the whole show because everything he said, she didn't like.
And so they were getting divorced because of the humming?
No, they were getting divorced because he was running around on her. She was humming to deal with it.
Okay, so she was right to be humming then a little bit.
There you go.
Okay.
Humming to get through it. It's either hum or divorce, apparently. So Judge, we wanted to talk about your article about surviving COVID confinement. And you give about 20 tips, I'd say, 20 pieces of advice of how to mentally get through this period right now. And so I have the list in front of me, some really good stuff on here. One of the things, the first one you talk about is, it literally says, talk about it. It's not business as usual. So you have to talk about how you want it to work. What things are we going to schedule and do together? How are you going to give everybody the alone time that they need? I can relate to that because my wife and I, we spend so much time together already. We were very close friends for a couple of years before we started dating. And so we kind of grew a rapport with one another. But it's tough now because, you know, she always craves attention and sometimes I just need alone time. And before quarantine, we were able to get that. But now I feel like a jerk because, you know, sometimes at night after dinner, I'll be like, okay, I'm going to go to my room and just play video games. And she's like, why? Why are you going to your room? Let's watch TV. And I was like, it's not that I don't want to be with you. I just need, it's like for my own mental sanity, I need to just not do anything and just play a video game for like 2 hours just to feel better. It's weird, but
right. And a lot of people are like that. I'm a lot like that. But the thing you have to do is discuss it at the outset. Look, baby, I need a lot of alone time. I told that to my husband when we got married. And I said, I need a lot of alone time. I'm that chick. So I'm going to have an extra bedroom. I'm not mad at you when I go in there. I just need alone time. If you tell him in advance, he doesn't get hurt. Why are you leaving? Why are you leaving? Why are you doing that? You're explaining to him the quirk in your head that you need to satisfy that has nothing to do with your love or feelings for her. So if you talk about it beforehand, knowing that it's not business as usual, you can talk about it as your quirk as opposed to you responding to her feelings of hurt because she misinterpreted your act.
So it looks like you're also recommending to keep a schedule, even though a lot of us have nothing to do.
Yeah, because and that's how things get long and boring and crazy. You know what I mean? And you're just like, what next? What next? So I'm like, hey, baby, we're going to do dessert and wine at 5. You going to pick the comedian tonight. We'll do that from 7 to 8. I'm going to run around on the treadmill so you have something to look forward to. And so you have a schedule that keeps you from sitting on the couch and deflating. You got something you got to do and somewhere you got to go at a certain time, even if it's in the next room.
Jared, do you think you guys have kept the schedule, you and Ashley?
I mean, we've been helped by whether it be podcasts or, you know, I'm still doing Hoffer. And so we've been helped by doing things like that. But no, we haven't kept a schedule. Like, I work out daily, which is one of the tips that the judge has on there, exercise. And so I've been trying to do that. Like, it's hard, though. It's hard because, like, the days are just repeating themselves so much that it's hard to keep up the motivation to be like, okay, at this time I'm going to do that, and then in an hour I'm going to do this.
But you don't have to schedule it that tight, and you don't have to schedule the same things. You know, you can have Martini Monday. And then on Tuesday, what we're going to do is take that walk. On Wednesday, we're going to paint the back side of the house tomorrow. I mean, you schedule something. It doesn't have to be all day, but you have to just say, oh, okay, we'll schedule 2 or 3 hours where we're going to get together. We're going to do this. We're going to look forward to it. We're going or look forward to getting it over with. But it gives you a sense that you continue to move.
How about you, Dean? Have you and Kaylin done anything like that?
I kind of am on the judge camp where it's never the same thing, but we always kind of have a structure to our day, which has been pretty helpful. I like, we're at three and a half weeks into this, and I honestly, like, haven't really gotten super bored yet, which I think is a good thing. But I'll also, like, I have different things that I need to be doing throughout the day, like, or, like, random days. Like, last week I restored my motorcycle. This week I'm going to work on my van a bunch. Next week, you know, hopefully I'll have another thing that I know that I need to do then. So I like have like little mini projects that I make sure that I work on at least a little bit throughout the week. But then as far as our schedule goes, like, you know, we wake up at what, like 9 or 10, make coffee, make breakfast, hang out for a little bit. We'll like work out. She's been practicing ukulele. And then we'll like have dinner. And like we always have like a set dinner thing too. So I don't know. I feel like we've done a pretty good job of at least like maintaining our sanity a little bit during all of this, which is good.
Yeah, we spend a lot of time learning. I spend a lot of time learning new stuff because it's better than TV or just spending time because it, you know, you could get concentrated on it, involved in it, and time really goes by when you do that. And it's also something that you can get better at. And so there's a, you get a little, a series of wins throughout the week. You know what I mean? Oh, now I know seven Chinese characters instead of the two. Now I can crochet five stitches instead of the one. You know, so it's, it gives you a sense of achievement because we humans, we don't do nothing very well. You know what I mean? We kind of just kind of, you know, we're like gaseous. When we got too much time and too much space, we just kind of float out there. But if you've got, hey, I got a direction, it doesn't have to be important. I don't need to know how to crochet. I don't need to know Chinese characters, but why not?
What's something new that you've learned?
I'm learning Chinese characters. I bought crochet needles and yarn 2 days before we went down. And so I've got a whole big box of half crocheted crap. I'm learning how to draw realistic looking eyes. I've drawn a sphere that looks 3D because you can learn anything on YouTube, right? Yeah. I'm going to be a master at nothing but a dabbler in everything by the time the suck is over.
That's my MO right there. Master in none, but a dabbler in everything. We've been doing actually a pretty decent job of keeping a schedule, like along the same lines of Dean said, waking up, getting coffee, you know, having some reading time and then exercise and then have dinner. And I'm on the same lines with Dean. Surprisingly, knock on wood, I haven't been super bored to think about that it's already April 6th. It doesn't feel like it's been that long of a stretch of a period. You know, it's something new I've done too. You know those master classes online?
I bought
one because I've always wanted to write a screenplay. So I bought one of the classes from Aaron Sorkin, who is a very, very famous screenwriter. He's written Social Network. He wrote A Few Good Men. He wrote The West Wing. And so I'm four classes into that. And then I actually...
Do you like it?
I really like it. It's fascinating. The thing is, it's very, like you said, Judge, you can get everything on YouTube. And so I've listened to a lot of interviews with Aaron Sorkin. So it is very similar. It's a lot of the things that I already knew because a lot of it is just, it's not really workshops. But but again, I'm only four classes in. And so in each class is only about 20 minutes. So I still have about like 10 to go. So I'm excited. It's fun, you know. So I bought that one and I bought one from Ron Howard. About directing, and he directed Apollo 13. He directed The Da Vinci Code. He's directed a lot of famous films.
And oh yeah, he's done a lot. I mean, yeah.
How the Grinch Stole Christmas with Jim Carrey, an underrated Christmas movie in my eye, but I digress.
Well, I had a question because a lot of people, I think, are kind of being forced to really understand their partner right now. If it's like a new relationship, or you're seeing your partner in a different situation that you know you would have never seen them in before. What do you do if you are the person who's driven, who has a schedule, who has all this done, but your partner does not want to make a schedule, doesn't really have any hobbies or passions, isn't really looking to do anything? What can you do to present that? Because I'm sure that would get really irritating. You know, you're like, I'm making a schedule to work out and better myself, but my partner doesn't want to do that. How do you go about that conversation? Do you go about that conversation? Do you just extend grace? Like, how do you manage
that? You absolutely do have that conversation. And that's part of the COVID conversation. So instead of coming at it, you need to do this, you need to do that. It's like, we got this new unique circumstance going on. Let's try this and let's try that. I know I'm going to be doing this, that, and the other. I'm going to meet up, you know, and if you're not into schedules, that's fine, but I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. Why don't you give it a try? So it's a, like, it's you and him or you and her against the COVID, not you against the other one.
I like that perspective.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Did Kaylin ask you to ask that question?
No, I'm not texting her. Don't worry about it.
Wait, why? Who wants to make the schedule? You or Kaylin?
No, I'm just kidding. I was just pretending.
No, you're not. You're not kidding.
I would predict Kaylin would be the one making the schedule, being like, Dean, let's go do things. And Dean being like, I got Call of Duty to tend to.
I mean, let's be honest. I could play Call of Duty until the cows come home. So, yeah, sometimes she has to pry me off of it. But, yeah. Jared, how do you manage your video game time? Does Ashley ever get upset with you for playing too many video games?
I don't really play that many video games. Like I said, so I'm the type of person that I have a difficult time sitting in one spot for a long stretch of time, which actually Ashley does not like because she likes to binge watch television shows and I can't sit there for more than 2 hours, which is why I like movies. because it's just right. the right amount of time where I can sit, watch something, and then I'm like, okay, I'll get up and I just got to do something else. Literally, especially right now, it's just walking outside or doing something different. But so video games, I could play for like an hour and a half, 2 hours, and then I start, you know, I need to just do something else. So it works out pretty well, honestly, because it's just a nice getaway. And then I come back. I really want to learn how to play, because I learned how to play keyboard a little bit a couple of years ago. And I really want to learn how to play piano. Like, I want to become a good pianist. And there's a piano at my in-law's house. But the problem is the piano is in the middle of the damn house. And so if I was learning how to play, everybody in the house could hear me. And I would drive them to insanity even faster than they're already on their path to. Even
on a faster bullet train than they're already on, huh?
And it's just like this piano is teasing me, because everywhere I look, it's just there, and it's this beautiful black piano. But I, unless they're out of the house, I can't play in front of them because I'm too insecure. I'm not that good. And plus, like, I'm learning Rob Thomas songs, you know, and like, it's just embarrassing. But Judge, I wanted to just scroll down a couple more. One that I actually really wanted to point out, because I have a problem with this, and I know a lot of people do as well. This isn't actually about a relationship. This is more kind of like the times that we're going through right now. But you said, number 12, stay informed generally. Know what's happening locally, but don't live the news. And I am 100% on board with that. I'm trying to stay informed as much as possible, but I find myself constantly refreshing Twitter or listening to the news, and I'm realizing how bad that is for my mental state right now, because the amount of information that's just being thrown at us hourly is too much to handle. And so I agree with you, where I think,
and by tomorrow it's no good anymore, you know, that the information, I mean, you know, people are like, why aren't they doing the right things? And there are a lot of reasons, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying we got this right at all. But we're learning as we go. It's a fluid situation. So everybody's going to have a whole lot of opinions. Your fear shows up before anything else. And you'll click on fearful things before you'll click on just regular things. And people know that. So they lead with the fearful stuff. I read with that in mind, because everybody has multiple reasons why they write why they write the way they do. And a lot of it is, how do I come to the top of all of the COVID noise? And you click on the more extreme stuff. This is it. You see what I'm saying? So every time I look with that as a piece of it in mind. That's number one. Number two, I've got designated times at which to look. I can't look in the evening, because you take that, you know, in the morning, everything seems fresher and newer. You can take stuff in and you feel like you can take some action, even if it's, doing one thing or another, or making a mask or whatever, but don't do it at night. You know, just have a rule about that. Don't do it at night. And if you can't manage that, I put screensavers that deal with my current foolish action. What are you doing, Lynn? Are you worrying? So I can't go on Google without seeing that first. Is it between 7 and 5? What you doing? So you have to have creative ways to manage your mind. And I'm always, the fight is never with, the first fight you have in any fight, it's not with the COVID, it's not with your loved ones, it's with you. Mm-hmm. And you have to fight your, I don't know, you seem very, very a relaxed dude. You're very cool, calm, and confident. I want you in a foxhole with me when we're fighting, because I know you won't lose your mind. I will lose my mind, but I have to manage my mind in a way that is like, okay, crazy lady, don't come out today.
You should tell my wife that. I'm cool, I'm calm, I'm collective. She thinks I'm paranoid. I'm just trying to stay ahead of the curve, you know?
Yeah, no, you're a thinker. You're like, you manage it. You know, it's easy not to be afraid if you're not paying attention. If you're paying attention, there are a lot of variables, and variables are hard on you.
Totally.
Judge, well, thank you so much for joining us. So you have your new season of Marriage Bootcamp Hip Hop Edition coming out, right? Or is that already out?
Well, as he said, the finale for this one is next week, I think.
I have it down at this Thursday, actually.
This Thursday, yeah.
Yeah, it looks like it's this Thursday.
There's another season coming in a month or so that'll be on there.
So you already filmed that?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So for the listeners out there, if you're looking for something to binge, be sure to check out Marriage Bootcamp. You'll get to watch Judge Lynn Toler on there as well. But Judge, before we part ways, anything you want to say or anywhere we can find you on Instagram, Twitter, anything like that?
Yeah, you can find me at Real Judge Lynn on Twitter and Instagram. I've written a new book called Dear Sonali, Letters to the Daughter I Never Had. It's my letters to, I have six sons and don't nobody want to talk to me. I wrote down my thoughts about dating, love, and womanhood in a book called Dear Sonali, Letters to a Daughter I Never Had. I published it at the beginning of the year. And if you ain't got nothing else to do, you can read that.
Did you keep trying? Did you want a girl?
Oh, my God.
Oh, you poor thing.
So much. So much. But I married a dude with four kids. Mm. And then four boys. And then I fooled around and had two more boys with him. And after that, I gave up because I figured he can't do girls.
Yeah,
so I'm not going to have a seventh son looking for a girl, you know, not doing it.
Wow, six boys.
Six.
You must be so tired, you poor thing.
Oh, my God. And I came from a home where it was me, my mother, and my sister. Dad came in and out because he worked all the time. So it was like a very female house. And then I got married to a dude with five dude kids and things were breaking and everybody was falling. And what's all this noise about? And they're fighting. So, you know, it was a whole new extraordinary, massive testosterone.
Yeah. It's a brave new world with six boys. I'll tell you that much. Holy crap.
Oh my God.
Well, Judge, thank you once again for joining us. Stay safe, stay healthy out there. And we certainly will be tuning in Thursday, 10 o'clock on WeTV for the season finale of Marriage Bootcamp. Hip Hop Edition. All right, we're back with Help I Suck at Dating. Dean was supposed to take us in, but he's not listening right now. Tori, you said you have a question.
Yeah, he's not listening. Okay, so on one of her questions, she said, be aware of your own annoying habits and try to keep them to a minimum. And if you can't stop, at least acknowledge the irritation it causes. Sometimes that's enough. What do you guys think, what has your partners expressed to you is the most annoying thing you guys do, especially in quarantine?
Mm. Oh, I think, Ashley, it's probably just my overall pessimism or my overall, like the judge said, I think what I do is I really think about situations and I project into the future. And I mean, you have good days and bad days, so I think, in certainly over the past, you know, at the times that I've been at the in-laws' house, you know, I'm just very cautious about everything. And so I think that has been, a bane in some people's existence here, unfortunately, but I just, you know, it's just a scary time and I'd rather be overly cautious right now than underprepared. So I think that's an annoyance. Again, like I said about the news, listening to the news constantly, I think is annoying. Cause like we said, there's just new information every hour. And so like, I'm just trying to keep up with it and I don't think it's really healthy or it's just not healthy. That's what it really comes down to.
Dean, your own personal annoyance.
The way that I annoy Kaylin, I'm always, well, this is no secret, but I've always been sarcastic. And I think sometimes, I always say the same thing whenever she's like saying something silly or like we're like joking with each other. I always end it by saying, "You're a real piece of work." And I think she like laughed at it the first couple times, but on day 23 of quarantine of calling her a real piece of work, she's kind of started to get a little frustrated with me.
You know what's funny is I'm reading Colton's book right now and Kaylin's in it.
How's the book?
It's actually very good. I really like it. I'm almost done. I'm about a little over 200 pages in, and I started yesterday, so you can imagine I haven't really put it down. But my curiosity: did Colton have to ask Kaylin to mention her by name, or is because she's a public figure, it doesn't matter?
I'm not going to, I can't really speak on Kaylin's behalf, but as far as I understand it, he didn't say anything about it.
Oh, okay. It doesn't portray her in any bad light. He says only wonderful things about her. And then he just talks about his season of The Bachelor kind of episode by episode. And obviously she's mentioned quite a bit. But the books is, yeah, the book is really good. It's about Colton's early life and then his transition into football, Bachelor, all that stuff. But yeah, he makes some revelations in there that have already been, you know, put out in press outlets. His battle with his own sexual identity being one of them, not really knowing at a young age if he was gay or straight. He talks about one instance, which is pretty traumatizing. If I was, you know, as a kid, you know, you think about being caught either, you know, doing well, you guys know exactly where I'm going with this one. Doing that or, you know, looking up porn, and he got caught by his dad looking up porn, but he wasn't looking up just straight porn. He was looking up gay porn as well because he just didn't know at a young age. It's pretty fascinating. Gives a lot of insight to his life. But anyway, yeah. So that's how we got onto the topic of how did I get here?
If you were to write a book about your experience on The Bachelor, do you think you would just be like writing about people that were part of your experience but aren't necessarily encouraging you to write about them? Like, if you wrote a book, how in depth would you be about the whole Kayla situation? You know, like, I think it's kind of silly and a little unfair to the people that he's mentioning in the book.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, I guess I'm, you know, answer this any way you want, Dean. Are you annoyed that he mentions Kaylin in the book?
I personally, the annoying thing is, it's just like it's bringing things up that he's like probably writing about things that maybe he doesn't, he shouldn't be writing because it involves more people than just him. And from my experience with this, is it's, you know, if Kaylin's in the book, people have been like DMing her about the book, and she's like, well, what the, like, I didn't ask for this. This isn't, you know, this, it's out of my control, whatever. I just think it's like, at least give them a heads up, get like the go ahead, get like their permission to write about certain things.
Wait, yeah, that's crazy. So he didn't ask her prior to releasing the book if this information was okay to add in.
As far as I understand. Yeah. I mean, again, I can't speak for her entirely, but that's what I understand. And I would imagine that's probably with everyone else too. And then it's like, I don't know, I have specific feelings about this, more so than just him writing about the girls that were on the season. But I just
don't think, playing devil's advocate, don't you kind of think that if he, I haven't read the book either, so Jared, you could speak on this too. If he only released information based on what the show produced or had, you know, portrayed on The Bachelor his season, don't you think it's kind of fair game to talk about? Or Jared, was there more that like wasn't shown on TV?
From reading it thus far, there isn't anything that I don't already know from watching The Bachelor. He's not giving any type of, I mean, he's giving stuff about himself, his time during The Bachelor and his battle with producers at times and things like that, but he's not giving any like, oh, this is actually how someone is when they're not on camera, they're actually this way compared to what you think they are. There's nothing like that. But I can also, you know, like I said, I don't know if he talked to any of the people that he's writing about in the book. And some people are written about more than others. Like I said, I mean, Kaylin's name is so far only being mentioned because she was a character on the show. You know, if that makes sense. Like from what I'm reading thus far, he's writing it. It's like almost a recap of what happened on The Bachelor. It's not rewriting any history.
Dean, would you read the book?
I don't know, actually. I guess I'd probably read it. I guess my question with it is, it's like, what was his purpose for writing the book? Did he feel like he had a story to tell that wasn't told on his season or post-season? My answer to that is probably not. Like, we already kind of know his story, so what's his reason for writing it then? Is probably to sell books and make money. And so if you're writing a book for the purpose of selling them to make more money, then you can kind of write about whatever you want. I'm not going to say he's like fabricating anything, but I'm just saying it like kind of like skews your intention a little bit. And it kind of like, I don't know. For me, muddies the water in a sense. But I don't know. It is what it is. I'm sure it's a good book. As far as I understand, the process wasn't him writing it. He like basically did an interview that then got transcribed into a book. But that's neither here nor there either. I don't really know exactly where I'm going with this, but I'd probably read it. I guess I don't see why not, especially if it's a quick read, if Jared can get through it in a couple of days.
If I can get through it for a couple of days, damn, anybody can. I don't read too good, guys.
How did you get a copy of it?
Ashley bought it. Because we're pretty friendly with Colton. I like Colton, and I can't say his name. Colton. I always don't pronounce the T. It's so bad. I can't pronounce names. What is wrong with me? The Rhode Island public school system has failed me. So Colton was going to send us a book, but obviously he, as everybody knows, had COVID-19. And so he couldn't send any of his personal stuff. And so Ashley just went ahead and bought the book, and then it came in. And so I was looking for something to read, and obviously I would find this pretty fascinating because we know Colton and we know his story, or at least most of it. So I started reading it. It is really well written. There's definitely, no offense to Colton, I'm sure he writes very well, but it definitely comes off as a ghostwriter, someone who's a very seasoned author. And it's pretty good. But what I will give credit for Colton with this book, he's not portraying himself in this glowing light either, which I really enjoy about it. He, at least from the perspective of the author and the perspective of Colton in this book, he's being very brutally honest with his intentions. Like in the book, it pretty much says that he went on Paradise because he wanted to be the Bachelor. Which I actually loved the honesty. Like I was reading that thinking to myself, and how much he wanted to be the Bachelor. Like he was craving it. And I don't know. I just love that level of honesty, you know, and then obviously everybody can make up their own minds, whether that's right, wrong, so on and so forth. But in terms of him just admitting it, I was like, all right, that's, I'm here for it. I love that. So anyway, so that's what I've been doing. And then still not playing piano because it's in the middle of the house, and that's my life pretty much right now, summed up in one.
Not to beat that horse here, but I don't necessarily like that either, just because it makes me question the intentions of everything that he's done. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I think if I'm being honest, I think all of us are kind of in the same boat to a certain extent. Like, I mean, like, I mean, if let's take this podcast, for example, you know, I mean, do we love doing it because we love talking about our own dating relationships and giving advice, or do we do it because it's a platform and we get to have an iHeartRadio podcast, which is so freaking cool, and people want to listen to us for whatever reason, even though I feel like I just spew nonsense constantly. And so I think I think for me personally, I don't think I've ever made a decision in my life solely based on one, whether it was right or it was wrong. I think there was a lot of reasons as to why I made certain decisions in my life.
All right, let's get to some relationship questions. How do you commit to a long distance relationship, especially if it's new? I feel like that could actually be happening to a lot of people right now because everyone's going back home to their families to spend this time away.
Well, I think now's a great time for FaceTimes and phone conversations. I mean, sure. Now's the time to get to know someone, right? I mean, there's nothing else to do. You can't see each other in person. You can't get to know each other physically. So get to know each other emotionally and mentally via FaceTimes, phone conversations, what they like, what they don't like. You know, and we're in this quarantine for quite a while, for at least another month. So you know what? Come up with like FaceTime dinner dates, you know, like eight. Hey, I'll call you at 8, you know, instead of I pick you up at 8, I'll call you at 8. And then, you know, maybe you guys can dress up a little bit because God knows we've all been wearing sweatpants for the past 3 weeks.
But I think what could be hard is that you're not really giving each other time or space to not respond to a text. Like when somebody texts, you immediately respond because you're not doing anything else. So what's a way that somebody could take texting and not make it stagnant or repetitive? Like, what's a way they can keep that alive as well during this time?
Well, Tori, let's ask you this question, because Jared and I are quarantined with our significant other.
This is true.
You're quarantined alone, right?
Yes, I love that you love to emphasize that.
Do you have roommates, or is it just you in the apartment by yourself?
So I have another roommate that I'm with right now. I have two other roommates, but one went to Arizona.
Okay, good. So, well, I guess my point was, it's good that you're not entirely alone.
For sure.
Right. Because I was looking at some of my friends. Sorry, I didn't mean to make it that, like.
No, I love it.
I didn't mean to put the spotlight on it that much. But my point is, it's like,
sure.
If you're quarantined by yourself, like fully by yourself with no partner and no roommate, I can only imagine the things that you would do to like stay busy. At this point, I haven't showered in 3 days. I probably wouldn't have showered once since the quarantine began if I was by myself. So I guess my question for you is, how have you been filling that void? Especially with like with guys that you've either been talking to or have met just recently. What do you do?
Yeah. No, I think that, I mean, to be honest, I'm somebody, like, I was trying to think about that question when I was like, oh, because I don't have a significant other to pinpoint what my irritations would be to them or something that would bother them. But I was thinking about what it would possibly be if I did have somebody else that I was spending time with right now. And I think it would be that I'm always on my laptop because I love to work and I'm constantly working. So therefore, I feel like I fill a lot of my void with work and busy work. But at the same time, like, this has been a time where I've been realizing that I think I put work too much on the forefront. And I need to be more aware of, like, if we ever had this situation again, I would have somebody else to spend that time with. So for me, it's kind of been more of a self-reflection time of being like, okay, so obviously, I mean, Lord willing, this doesn't happen again. But if it were to, I would definitely be more intentional with the people I'm talking to and not put work first. So I know I kind of like navigated your question a little bit, but I think that it's been just really like major self-reflection time of being like, okay, yeah, this sucks that I am feeling like a little lonely and like I love my roommate and I have family and like FaceTime calls, but like it definitely is hard not spending it with somebody else if I'm being totally honest. So I don't really have tips other than just like self-reflect and know that when life goes back to normal, to not take advantage of that time and be more aware of like, you can put work secondary and like put like that social or time alone with people and make that very like personal and like a priority.
I also think your situation is pretty unique too, because it sounds like you still have a full workload.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think that most people are either, like, I was talking to my friend yesterday and she was like, yeah, we got, like, I would say like a lot of people are getting laid off, whether it's temporary or permanent. But so they're having to find ways to fill their time entirely versus you're still focused a lot on work that you have to get done, which I think is probably a good thing.
Right. And I think that it's, I don't know. It's just hard. Cause I think, I hope this does kind of do a wake up call for all of society right now. When we go back into the wild, or however you want to phrase it, to just be like very intentional with people. And now it's like we're almost so oversaturated with like virtual dating that I think people are going to become sick of it and want to do more of the in person, which I think could kind of be a blessing coming out of this.
Really? I think I'm nervous it might go in the opposite direction. Everybody's freaked out to be within 6 feet of each other right now. You know, who's to say in 2 months when we start going back to normal life that people still aren't going to be freaked out being close contact with each other, close contact with people they don't know?
It's funny that you mentioned this, because literally just this morning, because China is considering itself to be back to normal, right? And today, let me read this real quick. So at this national park in China, thousands crammed together Saturday. Some still wearing masks as the park reached its daily capacity before 8 a.m., according to the state media. So the next day that the parks were open, they were so packed, more packed than they've ever been. So I guess at least in China.
Whoa.
Which I don't know if China is an indicator of what's going to happen in the Western world, too. But it seems like people are ready to rearing to get back outside. But I do agree. Some people are going to be more cautious. I think I remember hearing that
airline companies have cut their fleets by 25% for the next 5 years because they just think people are going to be traveling less too.
Interesting.
Well, it's going to be like Tori and I were talking about this before we went on the air. Like, when am I going to feel comfortable enough to walk into a restaurant where I'm bumping elbows with people or into a movie theater where the guy behind me is coughing? You know, it's like, when is that? When am I going to be psychologically okay to feel like I'm safe? Because I don't know. I mean, honestly, like I'm ready to go back outside and knock on wood. I have nothing to complain about. I'm in the house with my wife, and right now everybody's healthy and my family and loved ones are healthy, and we're staying in, and we're very lucky that we have electricity and power and the ability to Skype and continue with this podcast. Like, I have nothing to complain about, but it is interesting, like, in my mind, like, how, like, when am I going to feel comfortable enough to just think about, like, seeing my parents? Because then in my mind, like, what if I'm carrying it and I'm asymptomatic? And even though we've flattened the curve, like, I can still spread the disease without knowing it. Or, I don't know. It's just, it's kind of what I've been thinking about.
I think we have to also look in a less negative viewpoint a little bit, Jared, and know that, you know, someday there will be a vaccine, or, you know, like, there'll be ways, like, they've already found out that if you do, like, a Z-Pack and this other thing I can't pronounce.
Hydrochloroquine.
Yes, a lot of people are being healed. One doctor had like 25 out of 25 patients healed, so he had a complete success rate. So there's like a lot of new discoveries.
There is some new discoveries, absolutely. And I mean, there is a lot of skepticism around the combination of a Z-Pack and hydrochloroquine. It's not, there's a lot of upside and positivity, but, you know, also just nobody knows right now. And so I think, yes, see, this is what I was talking about earlier in terms of corpse that Ashley's getting tired of, is my negativity and pessimism, where, because, like, of course, yes, of course there's going to be a vaccine, but the vaccine, if we're lucky, will not be put out for another year. And so from everything I'm hearing, again, my negative Nancy side, is that they're most likely, even when this first wave starts to dwindle over the next couple months and we get into summer months, there most likely will be a second wave in the fall that we should be obviously well more prepared for, because going through the first time, but there still will not be a vaccine. Hopefully we'll have a better understanding of the virus. But this virus is so freaking crazy too. Not to go all virusy again here, but like, it's hard not to talk about, but like, it's crazy how some people, like 25 to 50% of the people, this is what the CDC was saying, potentially will have no symptoms from getting this. Will be asymptomatic. 25 to 50% of the people that get it. While this virus is also killing other people, and not just like young people are getting sick in the United States now. You know, the numbers are going up for between like 25 to 40. So it's just, it's like crazy how this virus is deeply affecting some people while others are walking around with no symptoms. It's insane.
Yeah. All right. For the next relationship question, is it okay for your partner to still?
This is why Ashley's getting tired of me, because I go into this like deep dive of coronavirus.
Is it okay for your partner to still have pictures of their ex on Instagram or on their phone?
Ooh, Dean, you answer this one.
Is it okay for someone to have pictures of their ex on Instagram or their phone? Is the question, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
I mean, I think I've deleted all my Instagram posts of exes. I also definitely don't have any in my, well, I mean, I still have some in my photo album, I guess, but just because I never took the time to go back and delete them. I think it's okay either way. It really just depends on what the person is comfortable with, really. Like, I had pictures of my exes up for a while, but then one day I was like, you know what? I'm just going to delete those. That's kind of weird. So I think it can kind of go either way.
I feel like if it's a wedding photo and your ex is in there, keep the photo. But if it's like them personally, it doesn't do any harm of like deleting or at least archiving it.
Yeah. I guess my thought when I delete them was, I was like, what benefit is this serving me for staying up? Absolutely none. And so for that reason, I'm going to delete them all. Like, there was no that 0% of any reason for them to be on my Instagram. And so I deleted them all.
All right. Well, let me ask the reverse question, Dean or Tori. If you went on an ex's social media page and saw all the photos of you two have been deleted, how would that make you feel? Would that bother you at all, or would you be really upset about it?
I don't think I'd be bothered by it if it was next. If I was dating someone, we broke up, and then he deleted all the photos of us, I don't think I would really worry too much. I would just be like, yeah, that makes sense.
I think that, if anything, it kind of brings healing to a situation of when you... I'm not very sensitive to exes being on your social media because that was a time and place that you two had together. But at the same time, I think that if I was viewing into my ex's profile and he deleted everything, I'd be like, okay, this actually brings closure that, like, this is kind of for sure done, which kind of sounds pathetic relying on Instagram for that. But sometimes it can bring that extra amount of closure to be like, okay, yeah, we're not going to like just jump back and be like, are you up kind of thing, you know?
Is that how you jump back into a relationship, with a you up text message?
I feel like they linger a lot, you know?
Oh, they linger all the time. Yeah, I don't think it doesn't really bother me, obviously. It's more, see, I'm the type of person I'm terrible at letting things go. And so even we talked about this many times on the podcast, I don't think you should really stay friends with an ex. And it's like something that I try to, not only do I preach, but I try to practice in my own life. But it's hard, especially when you have an ex that you think so highly of, and you're like, even though it didn't work out, I think so highly of them and I love them as a person. It doesn't bother me and I would delete it, but I don't know. I guess it's just weird. It's like that weird moment when you're like, yeah, no, this is officially done. I'm deleting all my pictures. It's like you're trying to erase that time from your memory. Even though you experienced it and it was real and it was very meaningful to you, you know, deleting it off social media kind of symbolizes like I'm deleting this from my memory, so to speak. It's this weird dynamic. Anyway.
I think for people in our position, Jared, I felt like by archiving photos of my ex from even before going on the show, I was like, well, I'm doing this for her too, in a way. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Like, my Facebook has always been private, and I didn't have Instagram or Twitter before the show, and so it was just never really an issue. But somehow people still found out. Like, I remember talking to her one time, and she said this magazine reached out to her. I forget what magazine it was, but this is when I was on The Bachelorette, and they wanted her to write an article about what it's like to have an ex-boyfriend on The Bachelorette. I was like, how did they find out like who you are? They'd have like, my Facebook is private, so like one of my friends that I approved somehow got the information. I don't know. Just a weird world we're living in, my friend. Weird world.
All right, Jared, we're gonna wrap up here. I'm gonna read this last email from Anonymous, aka Nick Vial, and then we're gonna go ahead and dissect it, if that's okay with you,
Dean. Of course, it's you. It's okay with me.
We're a two-headed dragon here. I just wanted to make sure the other head was approving of what's going on. All right. So Anonymous has to say, my best friend's girlfriend is the title of this email. They say, my best friend and her boyfriend have been dating for almost 4 years now, and we've hung out maybe 4 times, all of which have gone pretty bad. I'll give you an example. For her birthday, me, her, and our other close friend all got dinner and a movie. We were having a great time, but she wanted to leave early and was obviously upset. The best part to me is he didn't even pay or offer to pay me back for his part of the dinner and movie tab, LOL. I try to be understanding and give him the benefit of the doubt because I really do care about my friend. I would just like to get her to realize he needs to become part of her life too. What are your thoughts from a male perspective on everything? Is there anything else to do or say on my end? So it sounds like she has a friend who has a boyfriend who doesn't really like to be involved in her life outside of their relationship.
I mean, it sounds pretty shitty.
If they've been dating for 4 years and this is her best friend and they've only hung out 4 times, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's insane. What is this, like a long-distance relationship? I don't understand why they don't hang out ever. How is the best friend and the boyfriend not interacted more than 4 times? And then does he not have a job? Because is that why he can't pay for dinner and movie? Or is he just being a jerk and not even offering?
Well, he's just saying that she was obviously upset and left, so he just hasn't even... It just shows that he doesn't have the perspective that things are going wrong, clearly. Because he would have been like, you guys, I'm so sorry, that was so lame, she did that, Venmo request me, whatever. He's just, like, living in her world. He's not understanding what's going on around it.
I mean, I do. I, like, yeah, we just don't know the dynamic of the relationship. Is he always bad to her, or is it a unhealthy relationship? I mean, listen, if you're in an unhealthy relationship, which it appears to be, because if your best friend and your boyfriend are not seeing each other for more than once a year, then something's up. Then I would reassess the relationship and listen to my best friend's advice. And if you are the best friend who's writing this in, I would talk to you. I would talk to your friend and talk to him about the relationship and see if she's, if it's healthy, if it's unhealthy, how she's feeling. It's been 4 years of her life. I mean, that's a long time to be in a relationship. 4 years, something's got to give.
I mean, it'd be hard to bust out of a relationship that long just because your friend thinks that your boyfriend isn't being nice enough to you. But also maybe it's like a jealousy thing. Maybe he doesn't know how to act around her friends because he doesn't want to make her uncomfortable. So maybe he's being a really good boyfriend.
Hold on. Say that again. Maybe it's a jealousy thing?
Maybe he doesn't know how to act around his girlfriend's friends because he doesn't want to make her uncomfortable. So maybe he's being overly considerate. You know?
But how would that make her uncomfortable?
Like, I don't know. I'm just trying to play devil's advocate.
Trying
here.
To play, get the back of this guy. Yeah, I don't know. It sounds like it's an unhealthy relationship. I don't know, though. Who the hell knows? Listen, as the best friend, talk to your friend. You guys are best friends. You should be able to talk about a relationship she has for 4 years and whether or not she thinks that this is the guy. How's it going? Are there any problems in the relationship? I wonder how old they are, too. So much context that's left out.
Early to mid-20s?
Or they could be like 16. What if this is a high school relationship and they've been dating since, like... 7th grade.
Yeah.
That would completely change my perspective. All right, so this is a nice little segue into, if you guys are emailing us, which is, what's our email, Tori?
isuckatdating@iheartmedia.com.
Wow. Tori, your voice got so deep right there.
isuckatdating@iheartmedia.com.
I feel like Dean actually thinks I really sound like that.
Sometimes depends on how early it is in the morning. If you guys are emailing us, please give us a little bit more context, because we would love to help you answer these questions, but unfortunately a lot of them are so vague that it's hard to really give you guys a better answer, just because there's so much that we don't know. So if you're emailing us, which we do love, we love the emails, please keep emailing us. But just make sure, maybe give some age, location, no names obviously, because we don't want to out anybody. But just a little bit better understanding of what the situation is and what you think, what you're asking us, what you're asking us exactly, whether you think, like in this example, should I be giving advice to my best friend? Should I not say anything? Should I talk to the boyfriend? So just for future emails.
There you go. And hopefully, like Jared said, for this emailer, just have a conversation with your best friend. Maybe all it takes is that conversation for him to make an effort, and maybe he doesn't even know that he didn't pay you back, those types of things. Just have the conversations. Easy, done with. On to the next thing.
Communication is key.
That's going to do it for today's episode of Help, I Suck at Dating. Big thank you to our guest, Judge Lynn Toler. Be sure to check her out on Marriage Bootcamp this Thursday, 10, 9 central on WeTV. Big thank you to Anonymous for emailing us about your friendship woes. Be sure, like Jared said, to keep emailing us, isuckatdating@iheartmedia.com, and be specific, maybe like an age or like the extent of these friendships or relationships. That's always helpful. What else, Jared?
That will do it. Follow us on Instagram. We are at Help I Suck at Dating. You can join the Facebook group, Help I Suck at Dating Podcast. Please rate and review us on anywhere you listen to our podcast, iHeart, Apple devices. You can give us 5 stars if you want. We're not begging for it, but please give us 5 stars. And write a review. Let us know what you're thinking about the podcast. I know, obviously, right now, we're doing the best we can by Skyping in. So it's tough with all 3 of us Skyping in, but I think we're doing a pretty good job, and we're working hard. So if you guys have any content that you want us to talk about, please let us know. Comment on our Instagram. Send us emails letting us know what you want us to talk about. Any recommended guests that you want us to have on the podcast to talk about relationships, dating advice, anything and everything. We're looking forward to it. And again, thank you guys for listening. You guys are the best. Love Suck Army.
Woo! You guys.
Oh, and of course, hopefully next week we suck a little less.
Follow Help by Suck at Dating on iHeartRadio or wherever you listen to podcasts.